Blog Talk Radio.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Main Street Universe. My name is Daniel Michael, and I'm here with our lovely and talented host, Miss Janice Starwhite.
Hello, everybody.
And Janice is as well the host of the World Reggae Party.
We have a special guest tomorrow. It's Lenny Kulu. Sorry, K-U-R-L-O-U. Kulu. So. And he's from Jamaica, and he has a new CD out, and he's worked with Bob Marley and some other people, so it'll be really interesting to talk to him tomorrow on World Reggae Party with Goddess Janice.
And what is your little saying for your show?
I'm bringing the world to your ears. World Reggae Party with me, Goddess Janice. Ra, ra, ra.
And what is your mission?
To be a part of this reggae revolution part two, because the first part was in the 70s to the 80s, and now we're doing the second revolution.
Right. Because I remember, I thought at one time when I was there sitting in as a guest on your show, part of you said something like, world is our vision, party is our mission, something to that effect, whatever that saying was. Anyway, so check her out. That's FPA, Fairfax Public Access Radio, here in lovely Fairfax, Virginia. Now, I'd like to get to the other shows on the Main Street Universe Radio Network, including this one. 7 p.m. Eastern Time, every Wednesday, myself and associate producer Janice R. White, who will as well be branching out to her own show soon. And this is sort of, I guess, maybe the most eclectic show on the network. I call it the Community Center Show, and the other shows are kind of more specific little offices in that Community Center. We talk about many things. Paranormal, metaphysical, issues of nature. We had an excellent beekeeper come and join us. We should bring him back. Gunther Hauk, who was in the movie Queen of the Sun, talking about the disappearing honeybee population. We've also talked about the disappearing bat population. We have artists, musicians, nonprofit groups, including Brandon Cosby, who was a great guest, in my opinion, from OAR, which was helping people after they get out of jail. So he thinks about something every day that most people kind of don't really think about all that much. People kind of at their lowest point coming out, they lost their houses, cars, whatever, girlfriends, boyfriends.
Yeah.
And they help people try to get back on their feet. So we talk about many things here on Main Street Universe, including issues involving the metaphysical, esoteric, paganism. We do wieldier rituals, of which we have to do a Lunasa one soon. I might actually just do that tomorrow night if Queen Mother does not do a show. And let's get now to our lineup again. Thursday evenings, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, when she can make it. She's kind of going through a transition, so she's doing her show sort of in spots. But normally when she returns and she's back doing it regular, it's Renegade Wise Woman Radio with Queen Mother Imaku from the Kemetic tradition, reminding people that Egypt is, in fact,
in Africa.
So check it out. Original language prayers, Kemetic yoga, and all sorts of other interesting things. A very informative hour. Then on Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, we have Walking on the Sidewalk with Kevin Baird. Kevin is the creator of the Horizon Oracle cards, which had become my primary deck, and which, by the way, Janice, Kevin is sending us both a new version of the Horizon Oracle.
Hooray!
So you're going to get we're both going to get a copy.
All right.
And he says it's on better card stock and all that kind of stuff, so we'll see. I'm interested to see what it looks like.
Very good.
So he said he's sending us both one. It'll come here, and I'll just give it to you. So that all would be fun. He's also an artist who's created things like
liquid smoke
that I have hanging on my wall. It's kind of like cloud staring, and it's a very interesting abstract art form, I guess, and it becomes what you think it becomes, I imagine, especially you kind of light a candle and meditate on that. So anyway, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, you can find him at www.templeofgaia.com. Then Friday evenings at midnight, we have Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour with your host, Jessie Ann Nichols-George, and all four of her names. And
yes,
she also has four books to match, one for each name, I imagine.
One for each name.
Which is Activating Compassion and its workbook, as well as You, Me, Like Dreams, and its companion workbook. She has some great guests, including New Age musician Stephen Halpern, which was an interesting show. Great to have him. We've also had on Kevin's show another well-known New Age musician, Diane Arkenstone. So really getting in some great guests here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network. So that's midnight. And then Sundays at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time, we have Spiritual Insight with your host, Mr. Darren Bouquer. And Darren calls us all the way from the magical city of
New Orleans, Louisiana, NOLA.
Absolutely, and he is a reader of tarot and palmistry at Marie Laveau's House of Voodoo.
Which I've been to.
In the magical city of New Orleans. He might still be at Reverend Zombies as well, I'm not sure. But anyway, you can either visit him in person, or if you want a free reading from a very sought-after reader, Darren Bouquer, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So it is a divination show. You can call in for a reading. He also discusses things and topics too, but usually once you tell people you're doing readings on the air, those topics go away. Anybody with that experience would understand. And then on Mondays, we have Science of Light with our host, Mr. Randy Goldberg. Randy is our resident Vedic astrologer. He's also a local guy here.
Very nice man.
In the Northern Virginia, D.C. area. He also does Western astrology. He discusses Jungian archetypes and all things esoteric, metaphysical. And was one time voted in our little e-zine we get from Blog Talk Radio that the hosts get as one of the top five recommended metaphysical shows on Blog Talk Radio. So congratulations for that, Randy. And I haven't talked to him in a while. I usually communicate with all the hosts pretty well, and I haven't talked to him in a while. I should probably call him soon. Anyway, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Science of Light, Mr. Andy Goldberg. And then Tuesdays at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, we have the amazing master herbalist, and so honored to have her on the Main Street Universe Radio Network, Miss Susan Wee. And Susan's show is called Green Magic, Green Medicine, and it is basically a half hour that her and I both host. I co-host it with her, but I usually let her do more of the talking because she is, in fact, the founder of the Wise Woman Center, and I should probably let her do most of the talking when it comes to herbalism. So it's great to be able to, you know, pick her brain and ask her questions, and it's on 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Been talking about mushrooms, how to make herbal infusions, and many more. We did a show about butter one time, about the nutritional value of it.
Oh, I heard that one. That was a good one.
And because, you know, the cows help us break that stuff down. So not saying, like, go home and eat a whole stick of butter, but we're just saying that it does have some positive things. We've done tea. We've done many other things, different herbs, including some that were what she was calling the power plants, some of the more, like, psychedelics and all of that sort of thing, right and wrong ways of using those things. But anyway, so that's 10 p.m. Eastern time, Susan Weed. So check it out. That makes up right now. There will be more, but that
there
makes up right now
more.
The seven shows on the Main Street Universe Radio Network. And tonight, our guest is Ms. Shauna Aura Knight, and she is an author, an event organizer, and as well, I think at one time was a podcast host herself. And I'm going to go ahead, as I sometimes say, instead of me talking about her, I'll let her talk about her. As we ask her some questions, I'll turn her microphone on right now. Welcome, Shauna Aura Knight.
Welcome,
thanks for having
Shauna.
Me.
And good to hear your voice.
Yes, good to hear your voice.
Definitely, and likewise.
Now, I do remember, I think at one time you had a show on Blog Talk Radio, right, with Pagans Tonight Network?
Yeah, I was a co-host for Pagans Tonight for a while, for about a year.
Oh, okay. Are you doing any podcasts right now, or is that just something that was kind of back there now?
You know, most of the time I just guest, although the Pagan Musings podcast folks like to joke that I have enough punches in my punch card from having been a guest that I'm practically a co-host at this point.
And I'm not familiar with them. It was interesting when I started on the podcast thing. I ran into Pagans Tonight, and they kind of introduced me to Blog Talk Radio. And so I've had a few friends over there, Reverend Onyx. I think he then went on to do his thing as well. Not trying to go too far in this direction, but it's been an interesting evolution, and it's definitely been an interesting experience. We've been on the air, what, Janice, now about three and a half years,
because 3 years for World Reggae Party on October 11th, so about almost 4 years, because it'll be 4 years this year.
Almost, yeah, you're right, it will be. Oh, gosh,
yep.
It's been a while. Now, do we want to get to, first of all, and the first thing that I would like to discuss, and Janice will probably actually have the first question based on it, you're author of a book called The Leader Within, which I thought was actually a great opening title for that book, because I also like how it turns it a little bit inward, right? Some people think leadership, they think looking out and, save me kind of thing, which could get into some of the other problems we could mention later. So,
right.
Basically, Janice will have the first question based on that. And here you go, Janice, handing the mic to her.
Okay. Hello, Shauna.
Hi there.
Hi. My first question is, what led you to want to help create the pagan communities, or help create pagan community? Sorry.
Or a sense of community.
Or a sense of community with pagans.
Because some people would say...
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a big question. And let me see if I can break it down.
Are you still there?
Oh, she dropped.
She dropped?
Oh, gosh. She did drop. She's off. Oh, there she comes back.
Okay.
Wow.
I didn't hit anything.
I think maybe the fact that your call dropped right there just is maybe testimony to some of the struggle with forming a good pagan community.
Right. Well, you
but
know...
But anyway, you're back, Shauna.
You have a...
Can you hear me? Oh, gosh, you are breaking up on us. What I'm going to do now is try to keep our phone in the same place. Can you speak, Shauna?
Hello?
What we're going to do, try hanging up and calling back one more time if you can hear me. I'm going to play a brief song, and I'll come right back. Sometimes it's just a break. So,
yeah.
We'll be right back, and then we'll try to get back to Shauna's questions.
Okay.
We'll see if I can hear her off the air. All right, we are back after some brief technical difficulties, and I'm going to go ahead and put Shauna's mic back on. We were discussing the importance of a strong community, the importance of a strong pagan community, and what motivated you to seek this out and write about it and such.
Yeah, sorry about the technical difficulties. I think the technical difficulties actually it reminds me a little bit of what got me into the whole pagan leadership thing.
That's what we were joking.
Yeah, we were joking about that.
Oh yeah. Well, you
yeah,
know,
we were
you can have
about that.
But go ahead.
You can have these great intentions for, you know, hey, we're gonna build this community and it's gonna be great, and you know, and if everything worked out perfectly, it would be great. But then life happens and things are not the way you expect, and you know, technical difficulties arrive and interpersonal things happen and group dynamics happen, and most small groups, whether they're pagan or an arts group or like a grassroots organizing, like a political activist group, you know, a lot of these groups do not have training in dealing with group dynamics, and so when stuff like that happens, it just blindsides them. They just don't know what to do with it, and you'd think that human nature would give us the clues to this, but it doesn't. You know, there's just a lot of stuff that goes on, and it happens real fast. It happens real fast, and then people are like, "What happened to our group?" And so, you know, I didn't walk into group leadership. I didn't start out intending to write books on leadership. When I started leading some projects, actually in the science fiction and fantasy community, and I realized that I needed some leadership training, and that's actually how I ended up at the Diana's Grove Mystery School. And then when I started doing work out in the broader pagan community, I realized that there are just so many groups out there that didn't have those skills, and I felt kind of a sense of obligation to bring out the skills that I had. So it wasn't something I had never intended on traveling around and teaching or writing a book on leadership, but it was just I found that I had tools that people found useful, and so I started teaching, and then I started writing about it, and people were finding that useful. So that's kind of how that happened.
Okay, very interesting.
And I wanted to say something that's a little bit similar, what you're talking about. I came from it, and I attended a Unitarian church, and I'm related to Unitarian ministers. And so I see, quite literally, I live with two Unitarian ministers, and I rent a basement apartment from them, and they're my family. And I saw examples of how a religious organization is incredibly successful. So, and though paganism was more of a solitary thing for me, when I decided to reach out and find a community, if you will, or look for one, I remember thinking, wow, what a mess, because I had kind of witnessed very successful organizations, everything, and including ones that came into the Unitarian group, like one in Bel Air, you know, kind of a funny story is the lady said, okay, she actually led a pagan group into the building, and then without telling anybody, they were doing sky-clad ritual, you know, and it was like, well, are there kids around? This is a building with insurance. So again, it wasn't like anybody was so horribly offended by that practice, but it was like, you got to tell somebody when
you have to tell
you
somebody.
Know what I mean, when you're doing that. So I guess this gets to my point. There's a libertine nature to the history of American neo-paganism. And I was wondering if maybe you could speak to the point of some of the resistance that comes from those that want to keep that libertine sensibility, if that makes sense.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think what you end up with, what humans end up with in general are polarities. And we tend to think in terms of binary systems. We tend to think in terms of yes, no, good, bad. And so what people don't really do very well is hold the gray area in the middle. And that's unfortunate, because it causes a lot of the conflict that we have. And what we've got with this particular conflict is we have the pagans that were really, you know, they They were really feeling oppressed by the dominant culture's views on sexuality. They didn't think sex was bad. They wanted to be free to be able to have sex, and they thought sex was beautiful. And none of that's a bad thing.
It's a great thing.
Right. But that explosion of quote-unquote freedom ended up being still part of that dominant culture. It became a reaction to it. And so what you have are you have – like pagan groups and pagan festivals where people in leadership positions are pressuring group members to have sex, not necessarily even with them as the group leader, although that happens too. But what there's a pagan festival that I'm aware of. I've not been there, but I was talking to some of their organizers, and here's kind of how the conversation went. I had heard about some stuff at their festival where, how can I put this? So there was, you know, there was the naked dancing around the fire. You know, nothing wrong with that, as long as everybody knows there's naked dancing around the fire. You know that's going on.
Right.
But there had been one of those fundraising auctions where people auctioned themselves off, and this one woman had purchased the time of two men. They were of legal age, but how do I put this? There was a game of ring toss going on, and the men were naked, and they were the goal of the ring toss. If you get what I'm saying, between the lines. Okay. So, and in a certain context, okay, whatever. But this was happening at their main bonfire circle, and I had heard that there were basically kind of semi-approved orgies happening at this particular festival. There was some other stuff. And again, none of that stuff is bad if you've signed up for it.
Don't sign up for it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're on board, if you're into that, and if that's an important part of the festival and everybody knows going in. But this was a family friendly pagan festival. The conversation went like this because, I had heard that people were basically getting down and having sex, like, you know, pretty much out by the bonfire circle. And I said, I really don't want to be around that. I mean, it's cool that people are having sex. I just don't want to see other people having sex. You know, that for me, that's their, private moment, unless I know that I'm walking into a ritual and sex is part of the ritual. And I am clear on that ahead of time. In which case that would be a different context. So the conversation went on, and I also had said, I'm really not interested in having sex out by the bonfire where everybody can see me. For me, that's a private thing with myself and my partner. And the organizers of this festival basically were saying, well, when you get over yourself and you're less of a prude, you'll be okay with that.
So they're making it, it's your fault.
Right.
And I understand, and again, it goes back to the same example I made with this, what happened in the Unitarian Church, where the group came in. It was just about communication. You know, it was like, you got to tell people when you're going to do something like that. You're in a building, there's insurance, are there kids involved? You know, the people would have so many questions if the wrong person walked into that building. Or what if they're renting and a landlord walked in? You know, I mean, there are so many.
Right, exactly.
Things that can
go wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, they left over, I don't want to say that would be saying it wrong. The whole sex positive thing, which is, you know, always a debate in the pagan community. To me, it's very simple. It's a very simple argument, and it comes down to if it's a public festival, then no one should feel in any way pressured. Now, if it's a private group and they're used to doing this, they're comfortable with each other, but then, of course, some people, I guess the newness of it is fun, right? Hey, it's a new person. And again, meeting them and then inviting them to your private group is different than doing it, especially in one that's really supposed to be an open to the public festival. I think then that's horrible PR if you're trying to grow a movement.
Well, and again, here we are in the shades of gray. I mean, and there's so many different factors. And one of the things that I see being problematic, I mean, it's exactly, so much of it is about communication, but some of it is about that subtle pressuring. Now, a lot of pagan organizers and leaders who they think they are being sex positive, but what they're doing is being sex pressuring. Like what these folks were doing with me is they were being sex pressuring. They were saying, well, when you get over yourself, you know, when you are less of a prude, you'll be okay with this. And I was like, no, it's about my boundaries. Sex positive means I get to determine where my boundaries are. And the problem is, like, I actually wrote a blog post about this. There's a, it's in the book too. It's the blog post I called "That Festival Has an Orgy Cabin." And, basically I had heard about this festival where I had actually attended. I had been there as a guest, but I had heard that in the distant past they had basically during the festival they had an orgy cabin, and so I was asking them about it. I said, well, you know, how do you make sure that everybody is actually consenting to what's going on, and how do you make sure that safe sex is being practiced and that, you know, and that people are okay and that their boundaries are being respected. And like, you know, I asked them a bunch of questions and they had good answers for some of it, but some of it they were like, well, gosh, we didn't even really think about that. Like, we just assumed people knew what to do. And one of the things that I brought to their attention is I said, you know, here's the thing. I said, you know, you guys are leaders of this event, or, you know, or some, you know, somebody is a leader of the event and is also running or part of the orgy cabin. I said, what about your newbie folks who are there and might feel pressured to go and join in the orgy cabin so that they feel like they belong? And they were like,
go ahead.
You know, just they were like, oh, we, you know, they just assumed that people had good boundaries and, you know, knew that they could say no. And so, you know, that was my point, and that's often my point when I offer that leaders occupy a kind of a different space and have to be more careful about who they are having romantic relationships or having sex with, is that even if they don't think they have any power over somebody, there is a charisma factor just in being a leader. There is a power dynamic. And it can, there are many groups where you can have multiple different types of, you know, relationships. You can have that, but you got to be real clear. You know, you've got to really take some ethics, have an ethical approach to it. And that's hard. You know, that's really difficult.
It is when you're talking about a movement that does private or pride itself on, like, as I said before, like a sort of liberty-based view of the world. But then again, as you mentioned, and you made a very good point, but that also means that you have the right not to feel pressured. Mm-hmm. You have the choice to put up your auric shield and not to have those boundaries crossed. And I heard, and I'm not going to mention names because there are court cases, and I don't want to mention names on the air, of someone that got in trouble. And all these stories then came out afterwards of this person was a little predatory. Yeah, and people are like, oh, he pressured me into, you know, I felt pressured into doing nude photography in the woods with him, and I just gave in because I wanted, you know. We're getting to that point where it's strange, where it's an interesting combination. And I don't want to just always talk about the sex and nudity thing, too. We'll talk about other aspects of leadership as we go on. But let's just be honest. When you come from this sort of this libertine pagan thing, it just comes up. And so we're just being honest. And it turns out someone had a long history of making people feel uncomfortable to the point where they would stop coming to pagan gatherings. And to me, that just isn't any good at all. You have to...
Right.
The person does have a right to their own boundaries, and that is a form of freedom, of course, itself. Yeah. So I thought that was a very good point that you made.
Right. Well, and that brings up the crux of, you know, boundaries is, I mean, the boundaries issue is not just about sex. Boundaries is about all sorts of things. And I would say, you know, it's not a pagan thing. Having bad boundaries is not a pagan thing. It's just a cultural thing. We just have terrible boundaries as a culture. We do. Yeah, it's a problem. But the problem is when you add sex to the mix, it gets worse and it gets more obvious how bad the boundaries problem is. And you know, you look at what you just mentioned about, you know, you've got a long time, and I know the case that you're speaking of, or at least I think I do. You know, you've got a long time pagan leader, you know, pagan speaker who. There's a metaphor. There's an article out there called, I think it's the missing stair, and I don't have a link to it, but I can send you a link if you want it for show notes or something. But it's called the missing stair, and it's the idea that when you have something wrong in your house, like you've got a stair that's out of place or missing, you get so used to stepping over it that you don't think to tell people who are coming in, oh, by the way, you know, the third step up is missing. And what happens in communities is the missing stair is the person who is, you know, acting as a sexual predator or acting out in another way. You know, sexual predator is an easier example. And what you have are people who then run into this person, and nobody wants to kick this person out. Nobody wants to actually address this person because, let's face it, being the whistleblower, being the person who stands up, you're more likely to get kicked out of the event than the presenter or leader that you're speaking up against. And that's the rub. That's the thing that really sucks about all of this and why so many people don't speak up, because we're trained not to. We actually, just culturally, when you see someone being harassed, what do most people do? They look away. They look down because it's uncomfortable. They don't want to look at it. They don't want to see it. They don't want to acknowledge it because it's uncomfortable. And if they have to address it, that's even more uncomfortable. You know, it's a passive aggressive thing. So that's one of the things that happens in our communities. And again, it's not just about sex. It's about, you know, when there's an uncomfortable thing happening in a group, we tend to ignore it and shove it down and pretend like it's not happening until we absolutely can't pretend anymore. And then people are more likely to leave the group than to address it because it's easier.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've even seen that in like political groups and in all kinds of groups. These things aren't singular, certainly not to the pagan community.
Yeah.
We're just, since that's just sort of the group that we're discussing this evening, but they are just, they're kind of human nature, just like you said. They're, it's that nature to not want to confront. We had a guest on a while back, Frank Stormcatcher, who is a guardian at festivals. You know, he's a security guy, and a lot of people come up to him, they don't like him that much. You know, he's like, wait, you're kind of messing with our, you know, because he tells them to not do things because he's security, you know. And a lot of, let's be honest, a lot of pagans aren't particularly coppish. I mean, I certainly know I'm not. But Frank, you know, you see him, he's a pretty big guy. He speaks with authority. And he's like, stop playing with that copperhead snake, you know, was one story he told. Somebody was messing. He's like, no, man, I'm like bonding with it. He's like, it's a copperhead. It's going to kill you. And, but, so I wonder if maybe you could comment a bit on, do you think that security and things like, well, he calls himself a guardian, I don't know, around the rest of the country what people have these different terms or whatever, but do you think that, speaking specifically to pagan festivals, do you think that it's getting better? Do you think it's, you know, do you think there's some evolution?
You know, I think, I don't know that I can say it's getting better because I think it's very much contextual to the event. I know of some events, like Pagan Spirit Gathering is a very well-organized and well-run event. They have a staff of guardians who are on duty. They have duty shifts, and those, you know, those duties include first aid, and they also include, you know, basically being safeties, being, you know, being people that notice when something's going wrong, or being the person you can go to and say, hey, dude's playing with a copperhead over here, or somebody's, you know, which, oh my God, but yeah, but you know, the other thing that they are available for is like, you know, there's drinking that happens at pagan festivals, and sometimes people drink a little more than they should, and they maybe end up passed out in a place that's stupid, or they have a little trouble getting back to their tent. And, you know, the guardians are there to make sure that the things go okay, that, you know, and I would say, you know, they keep things going pretty smooth. If there's problems at Pagan Spirit Gathering, I don't see a lot of it happening. I've seen you know, I think there, you know, I've seen ambulances come in when somebody had heat exhaustion or something like that. And you know, stuff like that, of course, you know, happens at any event. But they work to keep people safe. And what I have heard, and this is anecdotal, and I can certainly fact check this. But what I've heard is that there has been somebody kicked out of PSG for inappropriate behavior just about every year. And so they are keeping an eye on things. They are working to ensure people's safety. And I think when you've got an event like that, you kind of have a responsibility to do that.
Because I saw you this year at PSG, but I saw you also last year at PSG. And I like PSG. And I know some of the Guardians, and they work extremely well. If there's a big problem, most people don't see it because they're already on the case and everything. And Selena and Dennis keep a tight ship, so to speak. So I've never seen anybody being thrown out. So that was news to me. But it's a pretty big festival. I think this year they had about 2,000 people.
Just over 1,000.
Just over 1,000? Okay, it just felt like 2,000. But but that leads me to one of my questions. Let's talk about your work with Circle Sanctuary.
Sure. What would you like to know? I should clarify. I am not officially affiliated with Circle Sanctuary. I have been teaching workshops in their Pagan Leadership Institute, which is basically a pagan spirit gathering. There's workshops in the afternoons, and they have it's called the Pagan Leadership Institute, and those are workshops that are flagged as being especially useful for pagan leaders and pagan clergy. And so I've had the opportunity to teach workshops in the Pagan Leadership Institute since 2009. So I'm one of the folks I'm not a Circle Sanctuary minister, but they find my workshops of value, so they let me teach in their Leadership Institute.
Okay. All right.
Because I think what Janice also meant, no, I'm not speaking for her, but I think what you meant, because I think we were saying that of all the issues we see, that Circle Sanctuary seems to be one of the really positive groups in the pagan community. It seems to run itself well and respectfully and all of that. So
yeah.
But I know I've this year I didn't really go to a lot of the pagan leadership classes. I've been to a few of them, but not a lot. But I also know that you do a lot with the main ritual for at least two of them that I've been with. And I know this year you were involved with Rivers Group, who's River
Higginbotham. Yeah.
Yeah. I forget the group though. I still remember. I mean, I was there, but helped solidify the main ritual. So I just wanted you to go into a little bit about that. And I know you just talked a little bit about the Pagan Leadership Institute. So,
I was asked to facilitate the main ritual back in 2010, and pretty much ever since then. And because some of the Pagan Leadership Institute classes that I teach are specifically on ritual facilitation, because they rotate who's doing it, and so they might have a specific group within the PSG community facilitate the ritual. They might have one of their guest presenters do it, and they kind of rotate that around. But pretty much most of the time when people are facilitating a ritual that big, they're always looking for volunteers, and so I've always made myself available to support with a speaking role or a non-speaking role or whatever they need for help. This past year, River Higginbotham is part of there's kind of two groups. It's really the same group, but it's so Enchantment is a camp at PSG. Yes. And what they do is they facilitate a chanting circle every night at 10 p.m. And And actually, what's really cool this year is that they recorded those chants, and they are available. So for folks who are like, oh, I know the words to this chant, but I don't know the melody, they recorded all the chants that we sang together. And there's a Facebook group that I created called Chants and Chanting, and you can get access to those if you join that Facebook group. But yeah, they host the chanting, and so they were asked to facilitate the main ritual. And because I've worked with those folks via Diana's Grove, I offered to help support, and was very honored to be able to help them out with that. And but that group is actually River Higginbotham and the Enchantment Group are actually part of a group called The Grove, which is Diana's Grove was a retreat center and mystery school in Missouri. And the Diana's Grove Retreat Center, they had to sell their land, and they are no longer offering the mystery school that they used to. So River Higginbotham and other folks have from Diana's Grove have kind of banded together in St. Louis to continue bringing that work out there. And so if you are interested, if you were ever thinking, oh, I really want to go to Diana's Grove and it's gone now, the work of the Grove is pretty cool. And if you message me, I can get you their contact information because they're pretty cool.
I will. And I think it's interesting you mentioned chanting, because chanting is always something that I am very into. I'm very into, well, I'm also into music during ritual, or at least drums. I'm very much into like the kind of repetitive, you know, pound a drum and do a chant and raise energy in that way. But what we're going to do briefly, Shauna, is take a short break and come right back. And when we return, we'll talk about a different aspect of leadership in the pagan community and what it means. And that aspect too, we'll talk about maybe two things. One, the next generation. Two, something that's always a funny word with pagans, money. So we'll talk about that as well. So we'll be right back after a brief song with Shauna Aura Knight. You're listening to Main Street Universe. And this song is from someone who has been our show before, Miss Kellyanna. And this one is Blessed Are We. We'll be right back.
Blessed are we. Blessed are we in the morning. Blessed are we in the light of the day, as we enjoy the earth turning. Blessed are we as the twilight descends and the magic of dusk is upon. And blessed are we in the dark of the night as we slip into dreams that are calling. Blessed are we in the awakening dawn. Blessed are we in the morning. Blessed are we in the light of the day.
Blessed are we in the awakening dawn. Blessed are we.
A brief technical issue, and we lost the chat room, and well, sometimes we have technical issues here at Blog Talk Radio, but we're going to go ahead and turn the microphone back on for Shauna Oronite. Welcome back, Shauna.
Welcome back, Shauna.
Hey, that song was gorgeous. That's not one of hers that I have, so I'm going to have to hunt that out.
Oh, yeah, and I forget which album it's on. Gosh, I guess if you Googled it, we could find it, or maybe one of our people in the chat room, if they can see the chat room, will find it. And I see our good friend Marcy there is in the chat room as well.
Hi, Marcy.
I think that's someone that you know, Shauna, but I guess I won't say her full name on the air if she doesn't want me to. But anyhow, I would like to discuss now another issue. We've talked about some of the things, whether it's uncomfortableness of, you know, sex, nudity, newbies versus the old generation, all that sort of stuff. I mean, versus maybe isn't the right way to say it, but I think you understand what I mean. Let's talk about another aspect of pagan tradition, because a lot of people in the pagan community, and in some ways rightfully so, I'm not passing judgment here, have a funny way of viewing money. And sometimes it's either on the extreme one end or the extreme on the other. And some will sell a potion for $300, and you can't even believe they get away with it, though I don't think they do as much nowadays as they used to. Or some will just, they'll have such a negative thing towards money that they won't lend it to support a tradition. And I wonder if you can talk about the modern pagan movement and its relationship with money and supporting a tradition and supporting efforts and festivals and everything else. I'm wondering if you could maybe talk about any experiences or anything you might have to say on that subject.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, and I've written on the topic of money in the community and fundraising and the difficulties there, because it, you know, there is certainly that polarity too. And it's yet another place where we have the, you know, people want to look at it as either totally good or totally bad, and it's not either of those. It could be either. What happens is, there's on the one side of the spectrum, you have your $300 spell potion people. You have your, you know, give me, you know, $200 and I'll initiate you, or whatever. You know, you have people charging outrageous sums of money for things, and particularly actually more in the New Age community, you see it more. But people, you know, people
right.
shell out for it because they've been promised magic and enlightenment, and they are desperately seeking that, and they have the money, so they shell out for it. But then on the other hand, you have exactly what you said, which is you have people who are just completely unwilling to spend any money on supporting local community. And neither of those really serves. Neither end of those spectrums is really serving us. Here's the thing. If we want services, if we want education, if we want rituals, if we want things to happen, that just inherently is going to cost money. There's a lot of different ways to make things inexpensive, and I think that one of the things the pagan community does an amazing job at is doing something with nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
But you know, I actually have an entire series of articles on fundraising, and I outline, like, what does it cost me to run an event in Chicago, for instance? If I'm doing, like, a day-long event where I have a few different workshops going on during the day, and then I have maybe a ritual going on in the evening or a concert going on in the evening, you know, something like that. Let's say ritual. Let's say I've got a ritual going on in the evening. My venue cost, my rental, it used to be $150 a day, and now it's $300 a day for the venue that I use. So just right off the bat, just to be able to hold that event, I need to be able to raise $300. I can't front that money. I can't, I am not able to do that. If I'm putting in the time to plan the event and I'm not getting paid for my time, I certainly can't be shelling out money as well. Additional costs are like if you've got if you're putting in food for the event, maybe you're just offering a little bit of extra, you know, maybe you're having a potluck but you bring a few extra dishes. Well, there's a cost to that. There's the time in cooking the food, and there's the money involved in the food itself. If you printed out flyers to promote the event, if you have a meetup.com site or a website, there's a cost for that. So, I mean, you know, we're just talking about the brass tacks. We're just talking about, like, the basics. And we're talking about more money than most pagan events can actually raise for a standing event. And, you know, a lot of people, because, you know, everybody, of course, has feedback. Well, why don't you just do your event in a public park? Well, I could, but we wouldn't have any privacy, and we'd have to end by sunset, and we couldn't use fire and a number of other things. So, you know, there's trade-offs. There's trade-offs for anything. Yes, I can find free venues in Chicago, but it's really going to limit what we're able to do. So that's one of the things with money and pagan events is, like, if you want to have an event, there's going to have to be money brought into it. Another you know, level above that is, let's say I want to actually bring in some presenters who are really skilled. I need to at least pay for their gas money, you know? I need to at least pay for their gas money, and ideally I'm able to pay them some money for their time. I myself, because I travel and teach as well, I used to travel just for gas money, and I can no longer do that because that means I'm getting gas money, but that isn't paying for my oil change. That is not paying for the brake job on my car. That is not paying for the handouts, the printouts that I did, you know? So, I mean, it's those costs add up. And I would estimate that I've, you know, over the past years, I've probably put in a few grand a year into traveling and teaching. And it should be the other way around. I should be able to at least break even, if not make money for my time. And, you know, I'm not looking for excessive amounts of money. You know, I'm not looking for, you know, give me $200 and I'll initiate you. I'm looking for, you know, what's a reasonable fee for my time so that I can come out and spend a weekend teaching leadership or teaching ritual facilitation or whatever, you know, whatever's going on. And same thing, you know, if I'm bringing in a presenter, I should pay them for their time. And, you know, and that's one of the challenges, is that you have folks that are so against paying for anything. But the thing is if you want services, you know, you're going to have to pay for them. Another example is Circle Sanctuary. You know, Circle Sanctuary has, I believe it's two paid staffers that are full-time at this point. And Selena Fox is one of them. And what does that enable Selena to do? Well, when there's a group in, when there's a group in, I guess there was a whole thing in Florida where there were a bunch of local Christian churches that were fighting against a pagan festival that was happening. And I know that there was a woman actually in Florida who, the local community like shot at her windows, like literally, you know,
wow,
fired a gun at her windows. She's a pagan author. And what that enables Selena Fox and the Circle folks to do is to respond to that, to call the media and offer a response from a credible organization like Circle Sanctuary. What it allows Selena Fox to do is when a Circle Sanctuary community member is dying in the hospital, Selena can go out and visit them.
Right.
You know, yeah. And so that's the thing is, like, you know, if somebody in my local community was in the hospital and wanted me to come visit them, I couldn't do it right now because I don't have the gas money to do it, because I'm not able to bring in enough income doing that. And that makes me very sad. That makes me very sad that because I know I am not alone in that. I know that there are pagans all over the place that would probably be happy to go and sit with somebody while they're in the hospital or do prison chaplaincy or do other things like that, but they don't have the resources to be able to do it. So, you know, that's the thing about money, is money in itself is not this evil thing. There are people that are charging for, you know, there's the tarot reader scams, this is like the big tarot reader scam. You go in, you get the free reading, and they say, oh, you know, there's a dark shadow hanging over you. I can break the curse for you.
Your path.
Yeah.
Right. But, and then they kind of judge like how much they think they can get out of you. You know, I can break the curse for $300. I can break the curse for $1,000, whatever it is. And, you know, that's not okay. You know, that's not ethical. But so, I mean, it's gray area. And I think with any pagan or organization looking to do fundraising and raise money, you've got to look at, okay, what are they looking at getting the money for? Does that look realistic? And does this help build something that I want to see? It's not just ink for money. They must be, you know, they must be out to, you know, just out to make a buck. It's like, well, no, I mean, if I were able to bring in, oh, let's say $500 a month through teaching, I could actually devote a significant amount of my time to teaching, and I could do more writing. You know, so I mean, there's things like that where it seems like a lot of money to some people in one, like, oh, I can't believe you're asking for that much. And then on the other hand, though, it's like, well, look at what it takes to do that. I mean, if you're teaching a weekend class, then there's the traveling to get there. So that's 4 days, you know, that's traveling to get there. There's traveling home, there's teaching class. And then there's all the preparation you do for the class. There's the emails with the organizers, you know, and so we're talking about a week's worth of work for a weekend class.
Yeah.
It's the money issue is on the one hand, it's complicated, but it's also really simple. It's just a simple math. If you want services, if you want education, if you want, you know, if you want some of this stuff, you know, it's not free.
And I want to also very much clarify, because I know, and I even have a few friends locally here in the pagan community here in Northern Virginia that are very like, anything like money is like bad for anything. And it's just, I want to clarify very simply. First of all, for a couple points you made, Sean, and I agree with you, by the way, completely. I'm not arguing with you at all. First of all, I think there are legitimate, totally legitimate diviners and tarot readers and oracle readers that don't scam, that just make. In fact, most of them, you know what most of them do? They work at the local New Age shop to make a few extra bucks and just get in touch with their local metaphysical and or New Age and or pagan community. They're not Sylvia Brown. They're not out there making, you know, $200 for 15 minutes or whatever. And they're totally, or if you believe in it, it's subjective, I guess, but they're legit, they charge a reasonable rate. And I always like to say we're talking about a difference between those things. We're not talking about the high price charges for like a cleansing or a blessing that's like way too much. There was a case in Salem, I don't know if you heard this case, where I think they charged a guy 16, I can't even believe he paid it, but I guess he was very wealthy. They charged him something like $16,000 for the exact scam we were talking about. We're going to cleanse your house. You got a curse.
No.
I guess they saw they had a rich, gullible guy on their hand. Yeah. It actually became a court case, and they closed the little shop down that they were operating.
Wow. Yeah,
so,
well,
they had,
you know,
some money. But what we're talking about is realistic relationship with money. So I want to make sure
right.
That's clear. Like, okay, if you're part of a tradition, well, if a tradition has a building, may need some, you know, donations. I don't know if I want to say as far as tithing, like in a church, but a similar thing. It's all on whatever level you exist at. If you're, I guess, if you're a solitary, then you're not really bothering with all of that. But if you're interested in this, you know, building still existing, or this tradition still thriving, or helping Shauna Ora Knight with her travel expenses so that she can go teach a class on X, Y, or Z, then, you know, then be kind and contribute a little bit, even just involuntarily, even.
If you can.
If you can. If you can, if you have.
Right, right.
I know we're all on different levels, you know, economically.
Well,
I actually know some.
You know, and I don't think the word tithing is a bad word. I know we, of course, have the insta-clench kind of reaction to it, because it, you know, it comes out of, you know, what.
Yeah.
The C word, yes. But here's the thing. The word tithing actually comes, it's an old word, and it means tenthing. And the idea is that it means that a percentage of your income goes to your faith. And, you know, obviously with tenthing, you're talking about, you know, 10%. Well, here's the thing, is like when I offer classes, they're always offered on a sliding scale, because on the one hand, I value getting paid for my time. I like getting paid for my time, because that means I can devote more time to doing this kind of work. At the same time, I absolutely hate the idea of teaching workshops where only the person with $200 can afford to come and learn the leadership techniques. I'm not in support of that. If you can pay $5, great. Love to have you there. If you can pay $200, awesome. You are not only paying for, you know, for yourself, you're helping other people to be able to attend that class who otherwise couldn't. You know, so I mean, I'm very much a fan of the sliding scale model, because it is a form of tithing. You determine how much income you have and that you can spend on that thing. It's, you know, it, and there's ways to manage this money stuff where it doesn't have to be, you know, we're going to charge $200 for everything. But at the same time, you know, people also need to, and I'll just, this, I'll get on a tiny little soapbox here, just a little bit.
Sure.
I have taught classes, like I did a weekend intensive in Chicago teaching trance techniques. So teaching techniques like singing and voice, and leading meditations, basically getting people into a trance state and teaching people how to do that so that they could do a better job when they're facilitating rituals. So we're talking about like professional skills. Like if you're out there leading rituals, these are professional skills you need to have. And there aren't many people out there teaching this stuff. And I brought in another presenter from out of town, and you know, we did it on a sliding scale, and I literally, there were people who kind of grudgingly gave me $20 or $25 for the weekend, for an entire weekend class. And then they went out to lunch, like we went out to lunch together, and I watched them blow, you know, $30-$40 at lunch without blinking an eye.
Exactly.
And right. And so, I mean, it's not, I'm not here to sit in judgment and say you shouldn't be buying lunch for yourself. But what I'm here to say is, like, if you value that kind of education being offered, you might need to look at, okay, well, what, you know, what do I value? And by what do I value, meaning what am I spending my money on? And if I value having education like that, gosh, I might need to put a little bit more money toward that and maybe bring a bag lunch so that I can do that. You know, and so it's about sacrifice. And it's about, you know, what am I might need to give something up to make this thing happen.
Yeah, and especially if it's someone you really admire, or even that's a friend, you know, and if it's voluntary. I mean, I donated $150 one time in the old days to I won't even go into the story. I probably shouldn't have, but anyway, I mean, I'm still friends with them. But my point was, when I had the extra money and it was voluntary, if it's important to you and it was part of your spiritual path, then I think that's incredibly different ethic or whatever than this idea of, you know, as we said before, paying to have the curse lifted, paying for the $300 potion, or paying for the, you know, someone who's going to promise your boyfriend's going to come back for, you know, $300.
Oh, no, yeah.
Or whatever, yeah. And all of this stuff. And people do. I mean, I know people that charge for spells that are good friends of mine. It's, I'm not passing any judgment at all. It's not something I would do. I'm not passing judgment. I'm just saying, but you know, and they don't gouge that much. Their prices aren't as extreme. But what I was talking about is more in the idea of supporting the community with the money versus paying for, I guess, the spectral or paying for the spiritual either advice and or spell or something like that. Because you're
right.
Paying for the education of it and for the support of the foundation of it, because things have a foundation.
Yeah.
A festival can't keep running without money and all that. And maybe here, we may move away now from money. We've talked about it for a while. And again, I think I might briefly want to, in a personal way, you had mentioned in the past having some experiences, feeling uncomfortable at some public festivals.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to also say that I don't want to scare anybody that's listening, that I think most of the experiences, or I haven't been to as many pagan festivals as, say, Janice, certainly not as many as you, and I know Janice has been to a ton. The few I have been very positive.
I've been to many.
In any way been uncomfortable at all, but my experience isn't as vast. But I do also think, as we had mentioned before the break, we wanted to maybe talk about the next generation. I think that just the values of the newer generation are just a little different. I think they compartmentalize things a little more. They don't feel like, both for better or worse, they can maybe feel a little disconnected and maybe a tiny bit selfish, as Queen Mother sometimes says about the millennials. They sometimes, but I'm curious if you see with the next generation, their value system's a little different, and if you, I guess, I'm trying to be positive here, or at least with my question, I see them a little more hopeful than some of the old, you know, hey, this is supposed to be a sex party kind of stuff. I'm curious what your opinion of that, of the new pagans, the new generation is.
Well, you know, I can't say that I've had too much exposure to people that are significantly younger than myself. And the reason for that is that when I started stepping into pagan leadership, I was the quote unquote, I was the young whippersnapper.
Kind of still are.
You know, right. Well, I mean, you know, coming into Chicago, when I moved to Diana's Grove when I was about 27, and I did their leadership program, and I was one of the youngest people to go through their leadership program. When I moved back to Chicago, I started organizing locally, and the quote unquote old guard, you know, the people that had been running covens and groups for, you know, 20, 30 years, some of whom had retired from running groups just because they got burned out and they got sick of the BS. You know, they basically were like, well, come back to us in a couple of years when you're burned out and then we'll talk, or, you know, basically kind of like that. There's a little bit of a vibe like that. And I remember being really frustrated at the time because on the one hand, I understood their burnout. I understood their perspective. But on the other hand, like a lot of them were like, well, there was this old conflict between so-and-so and so-and-so, and this person cursed that person and then they died. And like this whole, you know, they tell me these stories from like 20 years ago. And I'm like, and literally, how do I put this? Literally the people involved in those old conflicts in Chicago are almost all dead.
Right.
Literally, they are almost all dead at this point. But the few that are left still, like there's, you know, there's a guy that owns a store on the north side, and he, you know, you go into his store and he will still tell you about the witch war between so-and-so and so-and-so. I mean, and the thing is like that stuff, you know, yes, having an awareness of what groups might be problematic, that's useful. But the, you know, back in the day, there was this witch war between that's not so useful. And so
and
I guess
part of my point, I think I was talking about a cleansing
yeah.
of, I'm just mean from my experience, and Janice, is that I kind of like how the younger, when I do sometimes talk to a younger pagan, like in the New Age shop or something, I think it's refreshing how they don't know any of this stuff sometimes. Like, it's like, let's start from. What I mean by that is not knowing in a positive way, not knowing like in an education way, if that makes sense. Like, meaning,
absolutely. Well, and I think I have worked a little bit with there's a pagan group called the what are they called, the National League of Pagan Students, and I was working with them more like 3 or 4 years ago. A couple of their leadership team had to take a little bit of a hiatus because they had life things happen, but which happens, and I'm really glad that they took that time for themselves. But they were running a group. They were running some conferences, and they literally, and this is what I really appreciated about them, is that they asked me to help teach them how to run conference, which so many of the people who start out, and I will raise my hand on this one because I'm like this too, will be like, let's do an event, let's do a show in the barn and save the farm. You know, that's totally me. That, let's do this thing that we have no idea how to do.
Right.
And that's something that happens. You know, we in the pagan community do tend to do these pull ourselves up by our bootstrap kind of events. But what I think is really great is that these folks actually asked for help in like learning how to do this. And I did a weekend intensive for them on leadership and on facilitation. And then we talked through their plan, and I talked through like, how do you organize programming? What programming do you start with? Blah, blah, blah. You know, we talked about a lot of details. They had a lot of advantages because they had a student center available to them for free. So that cuts out a lot of the stuff because they didn't have to pay for a venue. That tremendously helps. But, you know, those folks were just, they were smart. They were interested. They were interested in learning. And I really think that if we've got more pagan leaders coming from that generation who have that attitude and mindset, that's a really great thing, because it was really refreshing to see that. And it's not to say that these folks are not going to have interpersonal drama, because they do and they will, because we're human. But I think that a lot of those folks, what I see with them is I see a lot better tools to actually handle it than perhaps the older generations. And I guess that's a lot of why I teach what I do, because it's not that conflicts aren't going to happen. They are going to happen. It's a matter of, do we understand ourselves enough? And that's why I picked the title for The Leader Within, is that, you know, it's actually kind of a joke for me, because it's like, when I started doing leadership training, I had this theory, and you'll laugh, I had this theory that, like, if I learn to be a better leader, then people will just do what I say more.
That never will happen.
Right. I learned that is not necessarily the case, and but that's the point of it, is that, you know, there's leadership tools. I can teach you group dynamic stuff. I can teach you communication tools. I can teach you all that kind of stuff, but you have to look at yourself. I have to look at myself. I have, man, you know, I get in my own way all the time. It's not to say that, you know, I'm not talking from my high horse on stuff that I don't know about. I'm talking about stuff, you know, if I get on my high horse, it's usually because, like, I'm like, hey, I've screwed that up before, and I'll probably screw that up again.
You're talking about having pulled yourself out of quicksand a little bit and going, okay, I'm just trying to tell you how to avoid that quicksand pile there.
Right. Right. Like, hey, there's, you know, when I talk about ethical stuff, you know, when I talk about sex and ethics and stuff like that, it's like, okay, I've either experienced some of this stuff as a victim, or I was an unwitting party to shutting people down on claims of sexual harassment, because, you know, there's the whole harassment thing that happens where somebody, you know, in a position of power sexually harasses somebody else, and then that somebody is a whistleblower and speaks up, and what does everybody say? They say, oh, well, he could never do that. You know, he'd never have done that. And you know what? That's part of why I speak about sex and ethics, because I was one of the people that did that. And, you know, I was part of the system. I was part of the machine. So I can understand it better now, because I've been there. I understand how it works. So that's the thing with leadership and why I'm really I am hopeful for the next generation of leaders, because hopefully they can see a lot of the stuff that we really kind of borked up, you know, in the pagan community, and they can see, oh, like, oh, here's how we organize a group where we don't do that.
Right. And again, we're talking, or especially in your case, you're talking from certain experiences, while at the same time not trying to make this whole thing sound terrifying for anyone that's listening.
Right.
That's who,
it's just awareness. Yeah.
We're just talking about how to deal with, as any group does, deal with its controversies. All groups have their controversies, whether it's a political group, a religious group, a band, or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
It is. You always have something. It's just about dealing with them. And now I might actually, and I didn't know if Janice wanted to speak on this a little bit, but, you know, sometimes in pagan gatherings historically, and Janice is African American, maybe we could discuss.
I am? No,
you
okay.
are? You're host of the World Radio
yeah,
Party, right?
Yeah, no.
And also, if we could discuss maybe race and pagan gatherings, which I think is getting better.
It is getting better. I know all about this subject, so I'll just push you aside.
Yeah, you'll push me aside.
I'll push you aside and talk all about it. This Samhain, I'll be 21 years again. I wish I could go back to 21 years, but I'll be 21 years in the community. And I've seen it all. Some things
right.
I don't want to see. And I'm kind of leery about the new pagans, but that's another story. And but I am, because when you've been at it for 21 years,
right.
you see everything. But the thing about race, I know that Taylor... Elwood did a whole track about it with Crystal Blanton, and I wanted to write something about it, and I didn't get a chance to because my sister had passed away kind of quickly, and that left a big hole in my life, and it's still pretty big. But there is this thing in pagan circles that people are shocked. Now, not everybody, but there seems to be some kind of shock and awe about African-American person to say that he or she is a pagan or a Wiccan or a witch. Or it's getting better, and there's people out there trying to make it better, myself, Crystal, you, Selena, but there's still some stigma about race and being pagan or being a witch. So, Shauna, could you address that?
Yeah, I've been really impressed with the stuff that Emanian Press is coming out with. Those are the anthologies that you're mentioning. There's Shades of Faith, Shades of Ritual, and then there's another anthology that's going to be coming out called Bringing Race to the Table.
Yes.
I have an essay that I submitted for that I'm not sure if it's going to be published as part of it or not, but I sent it into them. And in that essay, I talk a little bit about some of my experiences being, just to be totally transparent, being the clueless white pagan, Well, you know, the thing is I grew up in an area that was completely white, like utterly frosty, totally white. And, you know, there's so many things that I did not know about until I was dating someone who is black and who, basically, like, you know, I learned from him a lot of the mistaken cultural assumptions that I had that I wasn't even thinking about. I wasn't trying to be racist. I wasn't trying to be dismissive. It was just, it was stuff that just didn't even occur to me. And one of the assumptions, and I actually sat there and I thought about it. One of the first public pagan rituals that I went to, I remember somebody talking about, and it was an all white gathering, like not intentionally, just like there were no people of color there.
Yeah.
And what I recall someone saying is something like, oh, well, you know, in the black community, they've got their own, you know, they're not coming from a, you know, pre-Christian European tradition. They, you know, they have their own tradition, so they don't really come to pagan stuff. And it just, it was said in such a matter-of-fact way, and it made sense. And I thought, oh, they sound like they know what they're talking about. Okay, that makes sense. And I didn't even question that for a long time. And then, of course, years later, you know, I met a number of pagans and Wiccans who were African-American or who were people of color of other traditions, or, you know, who, you know, there's a lot of people who are mixed race, and you know, and they were coming to paganism and Wicca, and that's where they felt their home was. And it just, you know, once I talked to those folks, it didn't surprise me or shock me. But I realized how that can happen, because this, you know, this one person that had told me all those years ago, oh, they have their own traditions, that made sense to me. And, you know, there was no reason to question it. So I think that's something that I think a lot of it is, it comes from cluelessness. Certainly there are active racists in the community, and just like there's, you know, we like to think that the pagan community is very gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender friendly, and overall it is, but not everywhere, right? And you know, and I ended up being kind of an accidental transgender activist, because I understood what the basics of what transgender meant, and there are people who are like, okay, I don't get it. And so I would explain it to them, and you know, I'm like, how did I end up with the activist hat on this one? But you know, I think one of the things that really, really struck me, and this was something from when I had my ex-boyfriend, ex-fiance, is black, and he expressed to me something that has stuck with me. And what he said is, he said, you know, it's really hard going to all these pagan events where I am the only black guy in the room. And like, I didn't have any context for it. It didn't even occur to me, because, you know, I was in a room full of people that looked generally like me, and just, it didn't even come up on my radar. And so that's something I've been very aware of. And here's where I developed my compassion for that. I was in Chicago, and sometimes I'm asked to facilitate rituals for the local Burning Man community, which, if you're not familiar with Burning Man, Google it. I'm not going to go into explaining it, but the Burning Man community in general, like the pagan community, tends to have a lot of people who are overweight, and the Burning Man community, it has a similar spiritual outlook, but pretty much everybody is very, very skinny, very like twig skinny.
They were very skinny.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, putting on my anthropology hat to just kind of observe different groups and their makeups. And what I always felt very out of place going to the Burning Man community events, because I've just lost 120 pounds in the past few years. And if I go to a Burning Man event, I am still the fattest chick in the room. I am still the biggest person there. And so what I understood from that, how that gave me compassion for people of color, is, you know, it's not the same thing, but it's similar to, you know, I could feel that sense of I look different from everybody in this room. I don't look like these people, and I don't feel like I belong, and this makes me really, really nervous. I feel like people are staring at me because I look different than everybody else in the room. And I can only imagine that if it's a race issue versus my case, it was a weight issue, I can only imagine how much more difficult that would be. And so that's not something I can fix, in the sense of I can't, how do I put it? I, I can't make sure that there are people of color at my public rituals because I don't know who's going to show up. But that's just something that I'm aware of, is that people of color in a gathering that is predominantly white might feel excluded, you know, might feel like they don't belong there. And I don't always know what I can do to fix that, but I'm aware of it, and it's something that's on my mind.
And I remember, and I'm from Baltimore City and then moved out into the county like so many folks did back then, and I'm Caucasian, you know, Irish, and I work and did work in Baltimore City a lot, so I was definitely I was used to being in environments where I might be the only white guy in the room, you know, if I went to eat lunch at the local cafe. But I remember when it was the first time happening and remember thinking that, oh, gosh, you know, I'm the only, you know, pink toe in the boot, as they sometimes say. And so it is an interesting experience to be that. And you don't think about it, and you don't think about, like, oh, you know, these other folks having hatred in their heart or anything. But it is an interesting experience when that's turned around, when it's, then you are the only one there. And Janice had, for a few minutes left, with the Asatru group, right? And
oh,
she went
yeah.
to an Asatru group, and
yeah.
it turned out, like, somebody showed up to the group that was, like, a neo-Nazi.
Yeah,
and they wrote a, like, secret note.
They wrote a secret note that I couldn't read, and I was in the bathroom with the girlfriend of the Nazi person, and she at the time was talking to somebody else, and basically said that, you know, she didn't want to go and join this group because they had an N.
Yeah.
And we all know what the N stands for, so we don't have to go through
right.
that. And you know, and it was the same group that actually Frank...
Well, Frank's in that group,
yeah,
right? Yeah,
Frank Stormcatcher's
great
in.
Guy.
And I haven't had no problem with Frank or the group either because they knew me, my reputation, which, you know, I'm still wondering what my reputation is. But they knew me from that, and they were cool with me, but apparently this neo-Nazi wasn't. But he didn't have the equipment, I won't say what part of the body, to address me himself. He had to have his girlfriend try to address me
and
in the bathroom. So.
Wow.
But even recently, I was at PSG this year when, I don't know if you know it or not, but I'm in the MIT training.
Hmm.
Okay. I don't know what that means, but...
Sorry, it didn't go through. I did not know that.
Oh, okay. Well... Oh.
It's okay.
Okay, but apparently somebody...
It'll stay in the
arc. Had asked me, how does it feel to be the token of Circle Sanctuary? And it was just like, you know, I wanted to... You know,
smack him.
No, give him a right hook, and we discussed it. We discussed it as the MIT group with Selena and all this about not being the token, being the first, but not being the token. So there's still racial overtones in the pagan community. It's not going to go away. But I feel that it's been better 21 years later than 21 years before, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think so much of it is just, you know, and honestly, it's the same. It's actually the same thing with the kind of ambient sexual harassment that happens. It's the same thing. Is so many people are not aware that what they're doing is offensive. And, you know, it's on the one hand, that's not a total excuse for it, but at the same time, you know, it's a process of education. And I think we need that with just how, you know, how folks treat each other with, you know, personal boundaries and touch and not, you know, not casually touching each other without permission. But I think that's the same thing as like we need to learn better boundaries around that stuff. You know, that person probably, I don't know, they probably thought that what they were saying was being funny, and it's not. It's offensive. But they may not realize how offensive it is. And if they do, that's a whole separate problem. But
the worst. But yeah. We are pretty much out of time here, Shauna, and we want to thank you very much for joining us. And before you go, I'd like you to maybe plug any books or anything. You have the Leader Within, which I thought was a great way of saying that. And you have a ritual book as well, and I think you have one about scents and dealing with fire and scent and things like that.
And romance novels.
And some romance novels. Not exactly my genre.
I do.
Not my genre, but that's okay.
But that's okay. So
yeah,
people find you.
You can find I've got a page on my website where it's got all the blurbs for my books so you can see kind of what they're about, and that's ShaunaAuraKnight.com, and that's Knight as in round table, the Grail Quest, all that good stuff. You can find me on Facebook. I can't accept any more friends requests, which is kind of lame, but Facebook only lets you have so many, but you can still message me on Facebook if you want to get a hold of me. I have a contact page on my website, but you can email me at ShaunaAura@gmail.com if you have any questions. And all my books are available as ebooks on Amazon.com. That's probably the simplest place to find my stuff. But they're available other places too. And if you have any questions on whether or not they're available in a certain format, you can just let me know. But yeah, I've got the Leader Within. I've got the Ritual Facilitation book. I've got a book on dream work. And then I've got a couple other things. I've got the romance novels, which actually right now all my romance novels feature pagan characters. That'll be changing in the near future, but so far everybody's pagan. So if you like romance novels, or I've got an urban fantasy as well, and I'll be writing more fantasy stuff as well that isn't all romance. So.
And we haven't even yet talked about your other art. You do some other visual art as well.
So. Yeah, I have another website that's a portfolio of my graphic design and artwork, which I won't read over the URL is kind of complicated, but I do a lot of paintings, like a lot of Arthurian and Celtic stuff, a lot of mythic stuff, and I vend when I travel. But I also, I have a lot of my paintings listed online, and if you're interested in them, I certainly can ship them too. But I do graphic design, and I'm a very visual person, so I'm always working on something.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Shauna,
for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is great. This has been great to talk about stuff.
All right. So everybody, you've been listening to Main Street Universe with our guest Shauna Aura Knight. She's an artist and author, event planner, ritualist, and other things. Thank you for joining us. And remember to look inside and find the leader within. You've been listening to Main Street Universe, the show and network, reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined.
And I can imagine a lot.
Thank you very much, and have a great evening.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.